This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of February, 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 6th of February, 2025. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
Jacob Rayner.
Hello.
And he's a university student and has been at work on work experience as a reporter with the Hampshire Chronicle for the past 3 weeks. You yes. Say hello again.
Hello.
And Vara Williams.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Richards. The main headlines this week are: plans to build 188 new homes are abysmal, drivers face penalty for parking near surgery, and school will get a £750,000 upgrade. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Plans to build 188 new homes are abysmal. Council leader slams major housing scheme on the city edge. Developers are pressing for a major new housing scheme on countryside on the western edge of Winchester. An outline planning application for almost 200 houses off Lanham Lane has been submitted. The land is currently designated as countryside, but if given the go-ahead, the plans from Clare Group would see the largest expansion to the city since permission was given for King's Barton. City Council leader Martin Todd criticised the plan as abysmal. The applicant proposes up to 188 new houses, including custom and self-build housing, on 9.56 hectares of land between Lanham Lane and Westview Road, south of Dean Lane. In their planning statement, the Clare Group says, although directly adjoining the urban areas, the site is not presently located with any land designations and is considered to be open countryside. The site is clearly suitable with excellent access to services and facilities, as accessible as any urban location in Winchester. The planning statement also notes that the new houses would fall within the catchment areas of Harestock Primary School and Henry Beaufort Secondary School. It also notes that access to the site would be taken via an extension of Takedown Meads at the junction with Lanham Lane and the creation of a priority crossroads. Despite only just having been submitted to the City Council, the application has already come under fire, with WCC receiving written objections from the public. Rod Lawrence of Crouchers Croft said that if the plans were permitted, it would lead to a loss of green space. He wrote, "New housing would not only transform the nature of this portion of Lanham Down, but would also be seriously detrimental to the experience of the many people who enjoy walking in the surrounding area." Rhiannon Wright of Old Hillside Road said this would be a detrimental loss of local open countryside with public right-of-way walking. "The open area is enjoyed by the local existing community. It would have a negative physical and visual impact to the area and the tranquility of the land and surrounding areas." The Clare Group has been contacted for comment. City Council leader Martin Todd said, "Everyone at the council has worked really hard to put in place a properly thought-through plan for Winchester. We have the public meeting with the inspector in April, and this Lanham Lane proposal isn't in it. We're already building more houses than any other district in Hampshire, very close to the rate required from us by central government. With new sites coming forward like Sir John Moore Barracks, we just don't need this application." Even if it was needed, this plan isn't fit for purpose. Sending all the traffic down Teg Meads is abysmal. As a nearby neighbour and councillor for the area, I'm also concerned at the poor consultation. It's ridiculous that the first time any of us see any detail of the developer's proposals is after the plan application has gone in. To view the plan, visit the council online portal, reference 24/02737/OUT in capitals.
Drivers face penalty for parking near surgery. A new doctor's surgery in Winchester is taking action against drivers who park on the pavement outside its building. St. Clement's Surgery has relocated from Tanner Street to the corner of Upper Brook Street near Friarsgate. Warning notices have been erected against parking next to the building with penalty notices of £100 and the area monitored by CCTV. Before the surgery was built, it was a city council car park which was popular in the evenings, including home delivery drivers servicing nearby takeaways such as KFC, Domino's and McDonald's. The sign warns that blue badge holders will not be exempt. The surgery has been approached for comment. St. Clement's relocated last month after a 2-year and $3.5 million construction, offering a state-of-the-art facility for its 17,000 patients. The new building replaces one built in the 1960s around 300 yards away. It is a joint project between the surgery, NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, and developer Assura. It has 15 consulting rooms and 3 treatment rooms. There is a staff car park at the back of the building that is also not open to the public and covered by the parking ban.
School will get a £750,000 upgrade. A Winchester school will get a £750,000 update to its roofing and cladding under a new county-wide initiative by Hampshire County Council. King's is one of the 9 in Hampshire included in an £11 million recladding and re-roofing programme to improve thermal insulation and safety risks. Windows, doors and cladding panels will be replaced to increase insulation. Any asbestos will also be removed. Hampshire County Council gave the green light on January the 29th to the plans at schools in Hamble, Havant, Gosport, Fleet, Alton, Burselden, Kingsclere and Winchester. Since these schools were built in the 1970s, buildings have very poor thermal performance, being cold in the winter and overheating in the summer. The works for each building will see windows and doors replaced, the replacement of cladding panels and increasing insulation. The flat roofs will be upgraded with insulation to improve the thermal performance. Where existing solar panels are installed on these buildings, they'll be removed and reinstalled as the panels have an expected remaining lifespan of more than 15 years. Furthermore, Burselden Junior School, Fleet Infant School, Gomer Infant School, King's School, Kingsclere Primary School and Woody Infant School will be part of the County Council's re-roofing and thermal improvement proposal. According to the council, the work is necessary as the roofs are at the end of their life. The works will see the roofs recovered with high-performance felt or a self-finished metal panel system with additional insulation, new or improved ventilation, particularly in school halls and school meals kitchens, and solar panels replaced. Work is planned to start on-site in the summer of 2025. Councillor Malcolm Wallace Green said, "These projects look like a no-brainer. It's exciting to see improvements being made to our schools, not only thermal efficiency, but also the potential addition of more solar panels, so it's good to see." Executive Member for Universal Services, Christy North, welcomed the programmes and said the improvements will benefit not only current students, but future generations as well.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue now with the death notices, and that'll be followed by Christian comment, which will be read by Tony. So here are the death announcements. Alexander, Peter Herbert Alexander, in the 95th year of his life. Biggs, Anne Biggs, died on the 17th of January 2025, aged 90. Chandler, John Edward Chandler, peacefully on the 16th of January 25, aged 91. Cox, Ronald Sidney Cox, died on the 11th of January 2025, aged 92. Fluke, Roberta, known as Bobby Fluke, passed away peacefully at home in Swansea on the 7th of January 2025, aged 82. Flux, John Henry, beloved father to Michael and brother of Robert, died on the 20th of January at Winchester Hospital. Hebron, Edith Rose Hebron, died peacefully in hospital on the 10th of January 2025, aged 99. Holden Brown, Pamela Georgina Ellen Holden Brown, née Marshall, died peacefully on the 12th of January 2025, aged 90. Starks, Emily Louisa Starks, passed away peacefully at West Home Nursing Home on the 18th of January 2025, aged 102. Woodham, Henry Nigel Woodham, passed away peacefully on the 12th of January 2025, aged 88.
What have we learned? And this is from the Reverend Brian Taphouse. This week saw the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. How much have we learned from the horror of what happened? Around 10 years ago, I visited Auschwitz, Birkenau. I remember seeing a raucous stag party in Krakow the night before, full of drink, noise and celebration. That next day, I saw them again in Birkenau. They were stunned into absolute silence and shock. It overwhelms any semblance of comprehension, and almost any emotion feels inadequate. All you're left with are tears and silent, despairing questions. I've also visited the Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, which is the World Holocaust Memorial Center, which also left a profound impression. 80 years ago, we discovered 6 million Jews and millions of others were slaughtered. When does that stop being relevant? Some seem to think we should just move on. The Holocaust was an attack on difference, a denial of freedom and life itself. In each generation, we need to renew our commitment to the affirmation of life and the uniqueness of every individual. At Yad Vashem, the name of all the children killed in the gas chambers was being read out while being surrounded by thousands of reflected candles. This was a simple but such a powerful and beautiful way to remind us that the value of life remains constant, the power of voice and the power of light. We all need to raise our voice against prejudice and injustice if we want to see the light defeat the darkness. As Edmund Burke once said, the greater the power, the more dangerous the abuse. For evil to flourish, it only needs good people to do nothing.
Thank you, Tony. Letters now, and we have 12 of those. And let me just say that if you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase and one word, letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll start then with the first letter, please, from Jacob.
The title is Don't Take Elections for Granted by Simon Lever. May's County Council elections are an essential element of democracy, regardless which local party has a majority. Chronicle, January 16th. I agree with Councillor Sally Yeldon that combining existing county and district councils would not only undermine residents' rights to vote during May elections, but devolve a significant degree of influence by this government. Where there is seemingly a tendency to interfere with county council's ability to serve residents. Larger strategic authorities sounds itself deeply undemocratic. I cannot understand why HCC is supporting such devolution. Common sense would certainly prevail should residents be given the opportunity to deliver their thoughts on this most serious anti-democratic initiative. Local government elections are crucial for freedom and democracy and must never be taken for granted. That's by Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this is entitled Integrity and Trust and comes from Councillor Sally Yeldon, who's a Test Valley Borough Councillor for Abfield and Brashfield and a Brashfield Parish Councillor. People take public office for many reasons. The majority are driven to serve their local communities and uphold the 7 ethical principles that guide those in public office: selflessness, honesty, integrity, objectivity, openness, accountability, and leadership. Speaking personally, I also believe in a need for a fair democracy where everyone's voice is properly represented and heard. The cross-party petition Let Hampshire Vote was submitted to the Minister for Local Government and English Devolution last week, demonstrating the strength of feeling against Hampshire County Council's, that's the HCC's, request to cancel May's elections. The opportunity to vote in regular elections is vital. This principle is held in high regard by people from across the political spectrum who believe in democracy, 1,300 of whom have already signed the petition change.org Let Hampshire Vote. As I write, we await the government's decision of HCC's request. If this deeply undemocratic move is approved, it would place the incumbent county councillors in an awkward position. Extending their term without a legitimate mandate would undermine accountability. Writing in this paper last week, the leader of HCC, Councillor Adams King, attempted to rationalise cancelling the elections. His explanation was misleading, and I am obliged to correct his suggestion, which was repeated in an unseemly outburst during last week's Test Valley Borough Council meeting, that those challenging HCC's plans are politically motivated. Nothing could be further from the truth. Such accusations perhaps betray his own motivations for seeking to cancel the elections. We do tend to judge others by our own standards, after all. There are so many unknowns about local government reorganisation and devolution. What is known is that Hampshire County Council is grappling with a significant debt of £132 million and is requesting to increase our council tax by an unprecedented amount. At this critical time, let's focus on making careful decisions that serve our community's needs, interests, and well-being. Above all, let us embody trust and integrity and ensure that our democracy is upheld. And that was Councillor Sally Yeldon.
And this letter is headed Research Plea, and it comes from Dr. David Parry, MA, PhD. I am a maritime historian researching the escape of 83 merchant ships trapped in Baltic ports by the Germans when they mined the entrance to the Baltic at the start of World War I. Instrumental in effecting the escapes was Captain John Albert Layton, also known as Commander Layton, RNR. He worked for and with an Anglo-Swedish syndicate that managed to get the ships out of the Baltic under the noses of the Germans by using Swedish national waters. Layton then went on to save the lives of the crew and 60 passengers on board the SS Fountain Abbey when she was left stranded in the ice by a Bolshevik icebreaker. Layton walked ashore across the ice and spent 3 days negotiating with the Bolshevik authorities, who eventually sent coal and food by sledge across the ice and 2 icebreakers to free the ship. When the ship got safely to Stockholm, the passengers put on a dinner in honour of Layton. Many of the passengers were wounded German and Austrian officer POWs. Layton was awarded the DSO, and later, when he worked at the British legation in Stockholm as part of the war reparations negotiating teams, he was awarded the CBE. His medals were sold in 2011, along with a large file of official and personal papers, invaluable to my research. But despite repeated requests for access by the auctioneer and myself, the medal owner refused access. I'm therefore trying to find out more about Layton through his family. This is difficult, although I've traced his granddaughter, Susan Morger Layton, to Winchester. Unfortunately, she died in 2021, but it is possible that one or both of her 2 children are still in the area. And she would almost certainly have had friends in the Winchester area. I'm keen to talk to either or both. Please get in touch with me via email, and in lowercase dpy606@gmail.com. And I'll read that again, in lowercase dpy606@gmail.com. And that comes from Dr. David Parry, MA, PhD, at Kiln Lane, Farnham.
This letter is titled Communal Pride by Mrs. A.J. Herman. Reading the concerns about Winchester and its decay, Portsmouth and Southsea has very similar issues in regards to the city centre and Southsea's Palmerston Road. And yes, the councillors are paid. Elected governments always lay blame on what went before them. The public places should be controlled/cleaned by the council. However, we all have responsibility of looking after our immediate area outside our garden gates. I despair at the rubbish that people leave on the streets. Old mattresses, fridges, and other household items with notes on them saying, "Take what you want." These things are the individual's responsibility, and therefore should be dealt with by the homeowner or renter. Let's get to grips with being proud of our communal living outdoor spaces and make things good for everyone. That was Mrs. A.J. Herman, Shaftesbury Road, Southsea.
This one's called Curbing Speed, from Gary Leong, who's in the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. Following concerns regarding speeding on St Cross Road, which was raised at a recent beat surgery, I and the local South Beat DNO, Fred, I don't know what that stands for, conducted speed enforcement activities tonight with the use of a handheld speed gun. A number of vehicles were observed during this time, and we are happy to report that no vehicles were speeding whilst we were there. We appreciate that this does not mean the speeding issue does not exist, and we will continue to conduct more speed enforcement activities in the near future with this area and others. And that's Gary Leung of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, PCSO, Winchester City.
And this letter is headed oversimplified and comes from Peter Jordan. G.N. Barrett's letter, "I don't think they would refuse the BB Stockholm on housing for the homeless and irregular arrivals," overlooks the complex challenges homeless people face and misunderstands their needs. Suggesting that individuals sleeping on the streets would automatically accept being housed in the BB Stockholm is an oversimplified view of homelessness and disregards the humanity of those affected. Homelessness is rarely just a matter of lacking shelter. It's often intertwined with issues such as mental health struggles, substance dependence, trauma, or lack of support networks. To truly address homelessness, councils and governments need to provide stable, long-term housing accompanied by tailored support services, not isolated or temporary accommodations designed as deterrents for others. Conflating the plight of homeless citizens with the challenges faced by irregular migrants is divisive and unhelpful. Labelling migrants as ungrateful ignores the harsh realities many have fled, including war, persecution, and extreme poverty. The BB Stockholm provided substandard and unsafe accommodation that was difficult to access at the port, so claiming its people as stretching a point. Instead of pitching vulnerable groups against each other, we should advocate for better housing policies that address everyone's need with dignity. And this is from Peter Jordan, Park Road, Winchester.
This letter is titled Space for Nature by Christine Holloway. A reflection prompted by Julia Sanderson's letter, January 9th. I returned to Winchester 20 years ago, after having grown up here in the 1950s and 1960s. I was sad to see that so many of the ill-kempt, wild corners of the town had been tidied up. Only when I came back did I realize how many memories were of wildflowers, fish, and birds. Please, councillors, don't kill weeds and don't manicure every corner. Let's keep some space for nature. That was Christine Holloway, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
This letter, I feel, should have been read before Tony's one on the homeless, because I think hers was really a refutation of it. Still, cue jumping from Jay Willis. I quite agree with G.N. Barrett's comments regarding our homeless and giving them a place to sleep, Chronicle Letters, January the 30th. I'm sure our homeless would appreciate a place on the BB Stockholm, unlike the ungrateful illegal immigrants. A lot of these immigrants come from sleeping in tents, which is a step up from some of our homeless citizens. What if these illegal immigrants actually contributed to our country for them to warrant free housing, food, medical facilities, etc.? They are jumping the queue of us British who have put years of contributions into the country. And that's from J. Willis of Headley Close, Gosport.
This letter is titled, Is This Success? And it's from Joss Creese. The leader of Hampshire County Council, in letters column, January the 2nd, said, Hampshire has always been a well-run council, and we've been successful in making over 0.75 billion of savings over the past decade. Given the appalling cuts to services that continue in every area and every location, I wonder if anyone thinks that's been successful. It might not have been avoidable under 14 years of a Conservative government determined to cut public sector spend, but let's not call it a success. Rather than further cuts, we need to start seeing investment in public services that will drive the economic, environmental and social regeneration. That includes our children's homes, road maintenance, recycling centres, education, care for the elderly, policing, and much more. And that comes from Josh Creese, Rareridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter is headed Core Duties, and it's by Councillor Lulu Bowerman. With recent headline news around devolution and local government reorganisation, you'd be forgiven for thinking that this has taken our attention away from the County Council's core duties. But nothing could be further from the truth. I want to make it clear that we are still fully committed to making Hampshire's roads stronger. Despite having to deal with frequent weather emergencies and having to divert some of our frontline day-to-day maintenance resources to deal with storm events and salting main routes, our frontline highways team are still prioritising the repair of safety-related road defects, including potholes. We now know that the Department for Transport Highways Maintenance, the Department for Transport Highways Maintenance funding allocation for Hampshire for the next financial year from April 1st, 2025, is $52.9 million. And while this is an increase on the current year's funding, it is still woefully below what is needed to maintain Hampshire's roads to the standard what we'd like. I've previously gone on record in stating that to bring all of Hampshire's 5,500 miles of road up to a decent condition, we'd need 10 times that amount, around £500 million. In recent days, the Local Government Association's transport spokesperson, Councillor Adam Hugg, has been reported as calling on the government to give councils greater long-term funding, certainly for road maintenance. I couldn't agree more. Please do continue to report road defects, including potholes, to us using our online reporting channel on our website or via our Alhance app, which can be downloaded from your app store. That was by Councillor Lulu Bowerman of Hampshire County Council, Executive Member for Highways and Waste from the Castle in Winchester.
And a short note entitled Litter Woes. Litter, along with discarded traffic cones and road signs on the verges of our A-roads, has become a real eyesore. In particular, Spitfire Roundabout, just outside Winchester. When will the council do something about it? Charles Blackmore from Exton.
And this letter is titled Horoscope Hope, and it's from Mrs. E. M. Berry. It's the first month of the new year, and how wonderful to see the Hampshire Chronicle incorporating horoscopes. No matter whether you support it or not, it's always pleasant to read. Why do I say it's a good thing? Because many people in all walks of life could be going through bad or good times, and in a way it gives them hope. To be honest, it makes no difference where this comes from. It's needed in some people's lives. Because I personally absorb all I can and try to find direction. Believe it or not, I often find it within my birth sign. But whether I gain from it or not makes little difference, but it does make me think. So we're into a new beginning of a new year worldwide, and it seems like it's going to be very difficult, and us humans look for gentle hope and release in their day-to-day lives. If the horoscope can help them, hurrah! Well done to the Chronicle. And that's from Mrs. E. M. Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
We now have the Chronicle comment this week, which is read by Jacob.
It is headed, "We must still oppose abysmal proposals." Abysmal. Those are the words of City Council leader Martin Todd about proposals for 180 houses on farmland to the west of Winchester. It is hard to disagree. Our front page story highlights how developers are trying to force the hand of planning authorities. The land of Lanham Lane is outside the settlement boundary and not designated for development. But Clear Homes, which did not respond to our requests for comment, and other developers are hoping that the Labour government's demand for 300,000 new homes a year across the UK will pressurise councils to allow schemes that would have been rejected out of hand in the past. There is no doubt that Winchester and everywhere else is going to have to see more housing development back to the levels last seen in the 1960s and 1970s. But that does not mean a free-for-all for developers who perhaps, like CALA at King's Barton, will not build the homes at any pace. CALA or CALA got permission more than 10 years ago and have still not reached the halfway stage. The lack of skilled builders to actually meet the targets is something that is not being discussed by the government, mainly because the country would have to import thousands of workers from abroad. Councillor Todd points out that Winchester District is doing better than most trying to meet the government's demands. It is imperative that the planners do not lose control of this. Our planning system does need reform, but developer-prompted anarchy is not the way forward. Having said that, the idea that every field and hedge must be defended to the death is unacceptable. We are all living longer. More people are getting divorced and living alone, and there are immigrants crucial to the NHS and the economy who must be housed.
Thank you, Jacob. And first person now is read by Vara.
Yes, George Hayter tells us about a holiday mistake. My wife and I made a mistake in embarking on a 10-day driving holiday in the coldest time of the year. We set off on our 2,000-mile return trip across Germany to Austria early last month, when Hampshire and much of Europe were gripped by ice and snow. On our 3-day drive to a ski resort, we stopped in Mainz and Nuremberg to admire medieval German architecture, but both times ice-cold blasts drove us back to our warm car. In pretty Salzburg, where The Sound of Music was filmed, we endured freezing conditions for 2 hours. We were searching for the convent where Julie Andrews emerged to become governess to the von Trapp children and to become wife to their widowed father. For us fans of the tear-jerking 1965 movie, the convent gates proved an emotional destination, and despite the cold, we spent another frozen hour tracking down other Salzburg locations immortalised in the master musical. After Salzburg, we made our long-suffering car grind its way up 5,000 feet into the Alps. It was snowing, and the car skidded on the twisty road up to our main holiday destination, the winter sports resort of Obertauern. We'd booked 6 nights at the 4-star Hotel Romanhof. We were slightly alarmed to find the towering Romanhof perched precariously on the edge of a rocky cliff. When we drove into the hotel forecourt, a diesel snowplough was busy going to and fro, bulldozing piles of snow over an unfenced sheer drop just yards from the hotel door. The hotel felt lovely and warm, but we were not warm when we went to bed. Next morning we asked for a double duvet to replace the 2 single duvets that are the norm in Austria and much of Northern Europe. Reception staff appeared pitifully unaware that double duvets have been invented. I don't normally accompany my wife in water, but the hotel's ice-defying swimming pool I had to try. Half the pool is indoors, half out. Electric doors divide the indoor half from the half outside. You swim to the doors and touch them to get them to slide apart so that you can swim through. And get this, the half that's outside in the freezing mountain air has hotter water. Funny having your body in a hot swimming pool while your wet head is out in minus degrees and falling snow. It snowed most of the time we were in Obertauern, which was unfortunate because it's difficult to ski when snow is falling. Snowflakes stick to your visor and stop you seeing where you're going. And most of the time, the cold made skiing resemble torture. In Arctic conditions, there is one thing even more bone-chilling than skiing, and that is sitting high on a chairlift, dangling helpless in the bitter grip of an icy wind. One cruel morning at Obertauern, the temperature was minus 12, with a wind chill factor reducing the effective temperature to minus 20. Next year, we leave our ski trip till March. Salzburg, linked to the Sound of Music, was not the only place with a 1960s musical association. Posters of the Beatles all over Obertauern informed visitors that the resort was the film location of the ski sequence in the Fab Four's second movie called Help. There are even a couple of statues of them. Still shivering at Cologne, we took refuge in an enchanting candle-lit restaurant. During our meal, I saw a mouse darting around on the restaurant floor behind my wife. I didn't say anything in case it spoilt her appetite. But then she told me there was a mouse climbing glasses stacked on a cupboard behind me. We informed the management, who claimed there were so many mice in Cologne's old town that nothing could be done to keep them out. Terrible attitude. You wouldn't get that in our old town in Winchester.
Yes, Tony. Sorry, I was just thinking about
the mice.
About,
well,
yes, they need the Pied Piper, don't they?
They do. Yes. So Bellegarham, Tony. I think you've got two pieces.
Yeah, I've got
you?
Two pieces. Yes. One following the other.
Good.
And the first one is headed Parks Staff Calling It a Day. Three long-serving staff members are leaving their posts at Hampshire County Council, HCC, Parks. Tim Speller, the Queen Elizabeth Country Park, QECP, and Staunton Manager. Lorraine Evans de Santos, the Admin Officer for the two parks, and Scott Walbridge, Lead Ranger at Staunton, together have clocked up an impressive 70 years of service. Their departure at the end of January has left many in the community feeling the loss. Lorraine, who joined the HCC at QECP in 2008, managed finances for both QECP and Staunton. Over the last 2 years, she's worked part-time, continuing her valuable contributions. Scott began with the QECP Access Team in 2001, supervising the area's rights of way before transferring to Staunton in 2015. Tim became the manager at QECP in 1995 and took on the same role at Staunton in 2017. His leadership has been vital to the park's success. All three were instrumental in the recent National Lottery Heritage Fund project, which restored the Regency Parkland of Lee Park Gardens and enhanced visitor facilities. Last year, visitors were more than 300,000 people. The second article is entitled, excuse me, Intrigue Over Mystery Building. A fascinating photo has emerged from the collection held by the City of Winchester Trust. In the latest newsletter, Chairman Keith Lehman asked for information about a building he believes was near the cathedral. The image looks to have been taken 80 to 100 years ago. On trawling through the archives to select images for an exhibition, I came across one or two that I couldn't place. One in particular that intrigued me was this one, taken somewhere in the cathedral outer close, and there's a hazy building of a fairly ordinary looking house. I can't pinpoint the location or work out what it can be. Maybe some kind of boiler house. Any ideas gratefully received. Reassuring to hear that the problematic captioning of old photograph is not confined to the archive of the Hampshire Chronicle, held by Hampshire Cultural Trust, at the base in Bar End. And there's the mystery building photograph.
There are no special announcements this week. Sunrise and sunset. Sunrise this morning, Friday the 7th of February, was 6:52 a.m. Sunset this evening will be 5:07 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Jail for burglar who had bat and firearm. A man has been jailed after burgling two properties armed with a baseball bat and a firearm in Winchester and Ryde. Charles Toby Simmons, 22, of Swavering Road in Southampton, appeared at Winchester Crown Court after previously pleading guilty to two counts of aggravated burglary. He was sentenced to 6.5 years. In the early hours of Sunday, September 8th, Simmons attended an address on Simeon Street, Ryde, wearing a balaclava and armed with a baseball bat. The victim saw Simmons and two others on their Ring doorbell camera. Simmons then used the bat to smash the door and enter the property. One of the victims armed themselves with a hammer and chased Simmons and the others from the property, but was hit by a projectile fired from a BB gun. The court also heard how at around 7 p.m. on Sunday, September 15th, a 19-year-old man met Simmons on Wavell Way, Winchester, to sell him a vape. The victim got into a car with Simmons and two others, where he was threatened with what he believed to be a handgun, and told they were taking him to his house to take everything. The victim was then driven to his address on Cobbett Close, where he was shot in the chest with a BB gun, causing minor injury. During the burglary, the victim and another resident of the property was hit with a hammer by Simmons. Through CCTV, officers were able to track down the vehicle used by Simmons and arrested him at his home address. Two BB guns, a silencer, a hammer, and a notebook containing plans for the Simeon Street burglary were seized. Police staff investigator Michael Longmore, who was the officer in the case, said, "This was an incredibly frightening incident, which left the occupants of the targeted property understandably very distressed. Burglary, particularly aggravated burglary, can be extremely upsetting and traumatic for victims. And I am pleased that Simmons has now been brought to justice and will serve time in prison for what he has done. I hope that this sentence brings some closure to those involved and reassures the community that we are committed to bringing those who commit burglary to justice. We have a right to feel safe in our homes, and we will continue working tirelessly to protect that."
The county cuts £4.5 million as 350 staff quit. The cash-strapped County Council has approved more than 350 voluntary resignations, saving a total of £4.5 million. In light of the forecasted budget shortfall of £182.2 million for 225-26, Hampshire County Council has put in place different mechanisms to generate savings. In November 2024, the forecast budget gap for 25-26 was £116.2 million. The Council reduced the gap to £97.8 million, including by rolling out the first phase of its Saving Proposal 25. In the same month, Hampshire County Council's Employment Committee approved the Mutually Agreed Resignation Scheme, or MARS, which allowed staff to leave their jobs voluntarily in return for a payment. According to the Council, 354 MARS applications were accepted across the organisation, and all but six were implemented as part of the agreed-upon process. This has generated a saving of £4.5 million, £5.7 million lower than if the Council had gone down the compulsory redundancy route. The Council's documents reveal that £2.2 million comes from Children's Services, while £1.5 million comes from Adults Health and Care. Additionally, £447,000 is sourced from Universal Services, with the remainder from the three other departments. However, Council has asked Stuart Ashley, the Director of Children's Services, and Patrick Blogg, the Director of Universal Services, what impact this would have on the services and the rest of the staff. Council Pal Hare inquired whether the losses would result in additional workloads for the remaining staff, potentially increasing pressure and prompting some employees to seek employment elsewhere. Mr. Blogg said, "Absolutely not. We, as the director and management team, and I, in my role, considered all applications very carefully, and we were very clear about where a role was critical. We just could not afford to lose that person. We were not able to accept the MARS application." Mr. Ashley said that 86 applications had been approved in his department, but he'd received more than 220. However, not all of them will be accepted. He said, "We're very clear. If we need to replace your post, you are not going to leave soon. Overall, 86 members of staff are leaving us. I'm very confident none of these will have a detrimental impact on our capacity or in the safeguarding of our children."
Assault and abuse of paramedics, unacceptable. More than 4,000 staff and paramedics have been physically and verbally assaulted in the past 5 years. New data has revealed, with the executive director calling it totally unacceptable. It comes as new data obtained by legal expert revealed that between 2019 and 2024, a total of 4,191 South Central ambulance staff suffered abuse while carrying out their duties. Mark Ainsworth, Executive Director of Operations at SCAS, told the Chronicle, "Increasing levels of abuse against our staff are very concerning. Any act of abuse or aggression against emergency workers is totally unacceptable." Mr. Ainsworth continued, "Our staff and volunteers work tirelessly to support patients and should never be faced with physical or verbal abuse when trying to help people. Our crews receive specific training in managing confrontational behaviour and how to dynamically risk assess situations so they can withdraw and call for police or other support if needed. Radios have panic button functions, and we encourage all staff to use body-worn cameras to protect themselves and provide evidence to prosecute officers. We report incidents to the police when necessary and have seen a number of successful prosecutions. For people who are assaulted, we have a range of support, including team leaders, specialists in dealing with traumatic experiences, counselling, and occupational health services.
Bridge works run over by almost 2 months. A Winchester bridge, which was found to have significant defects during repair work, will be finished almost 2 months after it was initially planned to. According to Network Rail, St. Paul's Bridge was set to have a new railing installed after its old fencing was described as ugly. The original green barrier had been installed at the bridge near Upper High Street, was put up after a death there in 2020. In a letter to Winchester residents, Network Rail has said that repairs will be finished by February 13th. The letter said, "The project carried out by Nationwide Engineering on behalf of Network Rail was initially scheduled for completion last month. However, as mentioned in our previous update, unforeseen circumstances have unfortunately caused delays. To ensure all works are completed safely and to the required standard, we have applied for an extension to the completion date, which is now expected to be February 13th, 2025. As we focus on completing the parapet repair works and installing bespoke fencing, the scope of work required to ensure the structural integrity of the bridge has increased in recent weeks. This has necessitated further adjustments to our timeline. We deeply regret the inconvenience caused by this delay and sincerely apologise for any frustration it may have brought. We appreciate your patience and understanding during this period. Road and footpath closure. To facilitate the remaining work, a full road and footpath closure will remain in place until February 2025. Diversion boards have been installed on either side of the bridge and along the surrounding roads to guide pedestrians and vehicles safely. Please rest assured that our team is committed to minimizing disruption and completing this work as efficiently and safely as possible. Thank you once again for your continued cooperation and support. Should you have any further concerns or require additional information, please do not hesitate to contact us." The original planning statement stated, "The railings to be installed will be 1.5 meters high from the top of the bridge parapet and approximately 2.5 meters high from the footpath. The railing consists of T-shaped posts at 2 meter intervals. The post extends most of the way down the existing parapet wall and will be fixed using suitable resin anchors. Between each of the posts will be metal railings. The new railings are vertical posts, are to be painted in jet black RAL 9005, 30% gloss."
Dancers delight joyful residents. Performers from an award-winning Hampshire dance school wowed residents of a Winchester care home with a vintage afternoon tea show. 20 students from Winchester City Dance served up a mix of contemporary and ballet pieces in solo and group dances at Colton Cares Abbots Barton. The visitors included children from the age of 5 and young adults in their late teens. In a specially cleared space in the residence lounge, they performed ballet routines on the themes of Cinderella, Harry Potter, Mary Poppins, and Aladdin, alongside contemporary works. To complement the dance spectacle, residents enjoyed afternoon tea, with finger food sandwiches, cream cakes, and eclairs, all prepared by chefs at the Worthy Road home. Annie Powell from the Abbots Barton companionship team said the aim was to create the atmosphere of an afternoon tea dance, something many residents had enjoyed in their younger years. Annie said, "Some residents used to be regular attendees of tea dances, and one or two even met their life partner on the dance floor. For those who don't have the ability to trip the light fantastic anymore, we wanted to create an event that reminded them of days gone by when they used to hit the dance hall on a Friday night, or latterly go to more gentle social afternoons of tea and dance. The students of Winchester City Dance all performed brilliantly, and our residents really enjoyed it. It not only brought back many memories of their own dancing experience, it reminded some of accompanying their own children and grandchildren to dance classes. We were treated to a fantastic afternoon, which was greatly appreciated by all residents and staff.
Marwell Zoo raising cash to help save at-risk zebras. Marwell Wildlife has launched its 2025 fundraising appeal to help save an endangered species. The charity's Save Our Stripes, SOS, is dedicated to the conservation of the endangered Grevy's zebra in Kenya. As part of the initiative, the charity is relaunching the Marwell 10K Run, Hampshire's newest road race to raise funds for the species' survival. The Marwell 10K Run takes place on Sunday, September the 28th, offering runners a unique experience. The race begins with a scenic loop through Marwell Zoo, providing participants with an up-close view of its wildlife before heading out onto the surrounding countryside roads and finishing back within the zoo grounds. The event is delivered in partnership with Running Mania and Hedge End Running Club. Registrations are now open. Fewer than 3,000 Grevy's zebras remain in the wild, with habitat loss, drought, competition with livestock and infrastructure development driving their numbers down. Since the 1970s, their population has declined by more than 75%, with Kenya now their last stronghold. Marwell's Grevy's Zebra Conservation Programme works directly in Kenya to restore habitats, reduce human-wildlife conflict, and empower local communities to protect these animals. Professor Philip Riordan, Director of Conservation at Marwell Wildlife, said, "We are calling on runners and wildlife lovers alike to join us in our race to protect wildlife. The Grevy's zebra is an irreplaceable part of our planet's biodiversity, and their survival depends on collective action. By taking part in the Marwell 10K Run, you'll be helping to secure a future for this incredible species." The Save Our Stripes campaign features a series of fundraising events, including a zebra weekend at Marwell Zoo. This family-friendly event will offer keeper talks, discovery drop-in sessions, face painting, and fundraising activities. The inaugural gala dinner on Friday, June the 27th, will be a black tie evening set within Marwell Zoo's grounds.
Suspect hunted after burglary attempt. A man is being sought by police after connection with an attempted burglary in a village near Winchester. Officers have released an image of the man they want to speak to regarding an incident on Tuesday, January 28th, between 2:20 p.m. and 2:25 p.m. The attempted burglary occurred at an address at Carthagena, Sutton, Scotney. The man, who claimed to work for social services, tried to force entry into the victim's home. The victim, who had kept the security chain in place, was able to shut the door and prevent the man from getting in. The man police wish to speak to is described as being aged between 40 and 50 years, approximately 5'10" tall, of mixed race, slim build, short hair, and wearing a black woolen beanie, black hooded top, black cargo-style trousers, black trainers, a black shoulder bag worn around the shoulder, and sunglasses. He was travelling in a blue Vauxhall Astra with the registration number KA05UJX. Police believe the man in the release image can assist with their investigation and are urging him or anyone who knows his identity to get in touch. Officers are also requesting any witnesses to the incident, anyone who saw something suspicious in the area at the time, or anyone who has any relevant CCTV, mobile phone, dash cam, or doorbell camera footage to contact them. This can be done by calling 101 or reporting online via the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary website, quoting incident number 44250034960. That's 44250034960.
Cash for homelessness support as service shuts. Winchester City Council is getting a financial boost to help patients when a controversial homeless service shuts its doors. The City Council will get the £83,000 grant to help its homelessness services cope after the closure of the Westview House Hostel in Hyde Gate, Winchester. Last October, Hampshire County Council's Cabinet took the decision to allow the contracts and grant agreements for County Council-funded homelessness support services to come to an end on March the 31st, 2026. This will result in a recurrent annual saving for the County Council of £2 million and will contribute to its savings programme. But it means the closure of Westview House, a 29-bed unit which provides 24-hour housing-related support by the end of April 2025, following an increase in complaints from neighbours regarding antisocial behaviour. People complained about the lack of effective management of chronic antisocial behaviour, including drug dealing and sexual offences. The early end of the contract in Westview House, 11 months before the homelessness support ends in 2026, has released £249,858 of funding that is currently included in the 2025-26 budget forecast for homelessness support services. Therefore, Winchester City Council have requested the County Council to use the funding to enable them to support those people who are moving from Westview House. As a result of the closure, 10 residents from Westview House have been referred to Adults Health and Care Services for an assessment over mental health. The money will be used on the provision of short-term intensive support for rough sleepers, people moving on from Westview, people with drug addictions, with financial problems, who may have eligible care and support needs. The Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, approved the £83,000 funding in January.
New Head of Forest School appointed. A Hampshire private school has appointed a new Forest School head. Princess Mead School in Winchester has announced the appointment of Eaglica Hull as the new head of Forest School. Ms. Hull trained to be a Level 3 Forest School leader in 2017 and is a passionate advocate for the benefits of developing children's self-esteem and confidence through the child-led play and learning, through independent exploration of the outdoor environment. Adam King, headmaster, said outdoor learning has always been an integral part of our curriculum, and with Eaglica at the helm, we're excited to take this to the next level. Regular forest school sessions will give every child the chance to explore, discover, and thrive in our grounds which benefit from being within the South Downs National Park, an area with a rich and diverse ecosystem and a vibrant haven for wildlife. Miss Hull said, "I'm delighted to join Princess Mead and build on its rich tradition of learning in the outdoors."
Friends of Graveyard hails progress on Power Tool Talks. The chair of a Winchester charity has said he is optimistic following new council rules on power tools. The Friends of St. Giles Hill Graveyard had feared that their conservation work would be curtailed over an insurance issue with the City Council. Dave Stewart, chair of FSGHG, said that while a written agreement is yet to be produced, he has been told by the council that the charity can continue to use tools to maintain the medieval cemetery following a meeting on Friday, the January 24th. Mr. Stewart, who has been part of the charity since its founding in 2016, said, "A council officer came out and we walked around and talked about the issues. I think there's a positive movement. It's always been out there as a liability issue, but I don't think they knew how to fix it. They have assured us that if we want to use power tools, we could. That does sound positive, but we do not have a written final agreement yet. That is still outstanding. And until we've got that, we can't positively say that it is all done." This comes after the City Council told the Friends that they could not use the power tools due to an insurance issue, with the ban being issued on Friday, January 17th. Mr. Stewart said that FSGHG has another meeting with Winchester City Council next week to discuss the club's future use of power tools, including lawnmowers, to look after the site. He said, "We were thinking that if we were closed down for using power tools, it would be impossible for us to manage. You really need those power tools. It is 2.5 acres. It's quite a large area." A City Council spokesperson said, "We had a really positive meeting with the Friends of St. Giles Hill Graveyard on Friday, and we're working closely with them to ensure their work can continue. We're sorry for any upset caused, as we have no intention of banning any part of the brilliant work they do. We want to do everything we can to enable volunteers across the district, but as with our contractors, we also have a duty of care to volunteer groups to ensure that activities and equipment used on our land is sufficiently insured and maintained. This is not just for our assurance, but theirs, and the public safety too. We're positive that we will have a solution for this and look forward to their work continuing."
Youth Theatre Group is taking a trip to Wonderland. Chisel Theatre's youth groups are preparing for their annual show. The performances will take place on Thursday, February the 13th and Friday, February the 14th at 7:30 p.m. The junior section, comprising actors aged 8 to 12 years, will be performing Alice in Wonderland by Bernard Duffield. This adaptation combines elements of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. The storyline follows Alice as she navigates a chessboard in a fantasy world, encountering a variety of characters, including Tweedledum and Tweedledee, the White and Red Queens, and a caterpillar on a mushroom. The ensemble of 15 actors will portray more than 25 characters. The senior group will perform a fast-paced farce, The Fan, or Il Ventaglio, by Carlo Goldoni, adapted by the director, Nicky Hubbard. The plot follows the character Everest, who attempts to replace a fan that belongs to Candida, the object of his affection. However, due to a series of misunderstandings, the replacement fan ends up in the hands of several other characters, leading to confusion and comedy. Hubbard is known for adapting classic pieces for the senior group, with last year's production being Aristophanes' Greek comedy Lysistrata. Tickets for the performances are now available at chiseltheatre.org.uk. Chisel Youth Theatre runs weekly sessions during term time, providing young actors with the opportunity to learn a variety of theatre skills. And the sessions also include drama games and improvisation activities. And there's a photograph of two girls, one's portraying the Queen of Hearts and the other the Red Queen, staring at each other aggressively.
Party celebrates soft play area opening. A garden party was held to celebrate the launch of a new soft play area and a new shopping centre mascot, Brooksy Bear. On Sunday, January the 12th, a free event took place at the Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester. Many parents and their little ones attended, filling the atrium to see the new garden-themed soft play area. The marketing team led an event that included a bug trail, face painting, colouring, and balloon making. The Soft Brick Company has created a new garden-themed soft play area, replacing a previous one outside Primark and Sports Direct. It is suitable for younger children and is free to use. It was installed following the removal of a large Christmas tree that stood in place for the festive season. Management from the Brooks Shopping Centre and the reaction to the soft play was very positive. Many children enjoyed themselves on the equipment. The face painting, bug trail, balloon modelling and colouring were also a hit. Participants in the bug trail, who discovered the hidden word, received a sticker along with a choice of teddy bear or bubble wand.
Archives opening up for treasure tours. Winchester College has announced a new public tours programme for 2025. This includes two new collection-focused tours, archive tours and treasure tours. The college's public program now includes a range of specialty tours, including tours of its archives, collections, gardens and war cloister, as well as the long-running college tours, which focus on the school's history and medieval architecture. The new archive tours provide a rare opportunity to view two medieval rooms that house the school's archives, as well as displays of documents and artifacts. The archives are housed in the same rooms built for their storage in the 1390s and remain remarkably well preserved. Archive tours will run monthly from Tuesday, February the 11th. Treasure tours are led by the Museum and Collections Manager and showcase some of the college's works of art and rare books that are not normally on public display.
Rifleman's Museum to expand experience. Winchester's most popular military museum has been renamed to mark the start of a major redevelopment. The Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum has been renamed the Rifleman's Museum, as part of a project set to finish in September 2025. The redevelopment will provide an expanded experience that guides visitors through the legacy of riflemen and their enduring influence on the rifle's pivotal role in today's modern army. Since 1989, the museum has told the story of the Royal Green Jackets and its antecedent regiments, a story covering the rise of new military tactics and technology that proved key at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. To show how riflemen have always been unique, both historically and in the modern British Army. Now, an upcoming programme of redevelopment will expand this story to cover the formation of the Rifles Regiment in 2007 and illustrate how nearly 300 years of history has shaped the modern regiment in appearance, ethos and training. The redevelopment is currently underway, with work in the museum due to begin in the summer and finish later in 2025, when the new gallery will open to visitors. As well as new exhibits, the gallery will include a variety of interactive activities for children, as well as providing a flexible space for events and temporary exhibitions within the museum. The museum will remain open to visitors for as much of this period as possible, but visitors are encouraged to consult the museum's website and social media to keep up with any announcements about closures. Museum Chairman Brigadier James Plasto, retired, said, "We are thrilled to announce our new name as the first step in our upcoming redevelopment. Our role as a museum has always been to tell a story that means something to all our visitors, whether they're learning about riflemen for the first time or are themselves veterans or serving soldiers. We hope that when our new gallery is open to the public in September, it will allow us to tell the complete story of the rifleman from the very beginning through to the current day and even into the future." The museum has also launched a new website providing information on the museum, the history of riflemen, an online collection, and much more. And there is a photo of the outside of the museum and also of a life-size, I think it's a model of a rifleman pointing his rifle, because he looks so realistic I wondered whether it was really a proper person, but I think it's a model.
Strikes over pay and sixth form funding. Teacher strikes are continuing at Peter Simmons College and many other educational institutions around the UK this week. Members of the National Education Union, NEU, on the picket line on Owens Road are protesting for fair pay and better funding in sixth form colleges. Teacher Anna Witt described how the fundamental cause of the strike has not been resolved, meaning employees are still required to take a stand after months of action. She spoke of the personal impact surrounding the government's inaction. "It really affects how valued you feel as a professional." Another member of the teaching staff, Oliver Cockcroft, has been in the profession for 8 years and voiced his concerns about pay being eroded each year by inflation. Those on strike argued that the lack of fair play may have a serious impact on the younger teachers, whose lessening presence in educational centres is evident. Graham Childs, the NEU representative, related his feelings of dissatisfaction with the lack of reform. "It's really shaken my confidence in the current government. Having gotten themselves elected with the idea that education and skills are a priority, to then create a two-tier college system where some colleges are receiving less funding than others, I think they should be ashamed of themselves." Mr. Childs described that reactions from Peter Simmons students and management team have been overwhelmingly supportive. He discussed how the strikes have gained some traction. "We've had an improved payoff, but it still doesn't meet the demands of the union, which are a matching payoff for every sixth form."
MP hits out over water company bailouts. Liberal Democrat MP for Winchester, Denny Chambers, has criticised Labour and Conservative MPs for not supporting a plan to protect customers from paying for water company bailouts. The Lib Dems proposed an amendment to the Water Special Measures Bill aimed at shielding consumers from the financial burden of bankrupt water companies. However, this was rejected by both Labour and Conservatives. Mr. Chambers said, "We urgently need a fair deal that prioritises people and the environment above the bonuses of Southern Water bosses. For too long, they've been able to get away with financial mismanagement, knowing hard-working people will be expected to pick up the tab." The Liberal Democrats have highlighted that, on average, a third of water bills are spent on debt. At privatisation in the late 1980s, the new water companies were debt-free. They have pledged to continue campaigning for a fair deal for consumers, who are facing significant bill increases. Bills for Southern Water customers are set to rise next year by an average of £224, an increase of 47%. Mr. Chambers added, "I'm proud that the Liberal Democrats are taking the government to task on the issue, and I hope the government changes course and puts people first. We have already secured a single social tariff for vulnerable people, and will continue to fight for fair bills and end pollution in our precious chalk streams like the Itchen, and better services for customers." And there's a nice photo of Danny Chambers testing the water quality at the river Itchen.
Law firm gives boost to local food pantry. A Winchester-based law firm has supported a community food pantry with a vital cash donation. Godwin Solicitors, based in St Thomas Street, donated £250 to the Carroll Community Centre in Stanmore. This contribution will help the centre keep its food pantry stocked with daily essentials for local families in need. More than 150 people visit the food pantry each month, and the demand is rising as more people grapple with the cost of living.
A demand for the rise for cancer charity. Wessex Cancer Support provided 19,000 individual support sessions across its four centres in Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight. There was also a 48% increase in the number of online support sessions accessed. The charity's Daisy Buses made 15,284 journeys in 2024, transporting patients from the Isle of Wight to their hospital appointments in Southampton and Portsmouth. 100% of clients said the support they received was good or excellent. Suzanne Bannister, Wessex Cancer Support's Director of Services, said, "Even though cancer is likely to affect most people at some point in their lives, either personally or through a loved one, it's still so difficult for many people to talk about openly. As a charity, we know that everyone's experience is different, and we encourage open conversations, emphasizing that it's not just about medical treatment, but a personal, emotional, and social and practical challenges. We're here to provide free, local, and personalized support to anyone affected by cancer in Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight, either at one of our four centres or online."
Renowned pianist and Jane Austen tribute. A renowned pianist will perform a special concert on a unique instrument in Stockbridge in tribute to Jane Austen. David Owen Norris will open Stockbridge Music's 2025 season with a recital at St. Peter's Church on Friday, March 7th. His program, titled Yes, Yes, We Will Have a Pianoforte, will feature his original 4T piano, built by Christopher Garner. Tickets are available at Stockbridge Music UK. Expressing his excitement, Mr. Owen Norris said, "I'm looking forward to playing in Stockbridge once again. There are always good friends, both old and new, in the audience, and it's a pleasure to play for them. The evening promises a selection of pieces from Mozart, Bach, and Kielmark, along with the theme from the BBC's Pride and Prejudice, composed by Carl Davis. The music is reflective of works that might have been found in the library of Jane Austen, who lived during the time the 4T piano was built. The concert, presented as a tribute to Jane Austen, starts at 7:30 p.m.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts. to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and of course to our readers today, Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
Jacob Rayner.
Thank you very much.
Vara Williams.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, John Richards. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio, 99.8 FM, and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Goodbye.